Welcome back to the broadcast, the second hour of American Exposé. RBNLive.com is the website for the network. Support the directions that the network offers to you to help keep the network running, listeners. Very important that you do this. This is your responsibility to keep the network operational. Vicki, are you with me? Okay, we'll have to call Vicki at the commercial pause and get her up with William. As you were closing out the first hour, William, you were giving out the phone number for UN Publications?
That's right. Anyone that wants to get a copy of the Autumn 2005 UN Publications Catalog, which is would be an excellent resource tool and an excellent way to get this hard copy material in your own hands so that you can take that into the community, can do so by simply calling 1-800-253-9646. That's 253-9646. Ask for a copy of the Autumn 2005 catalog. You know, continue on this law issue, Chris. Then there's another very curious book here. This one runs in at $30, has 740 pages in it. It's part two in a two-part series. It's titled National Laws and Regulations on the Prevention and the Suppression of International Terrorism, Part 2. This is the quote that they have in here. The aim of this compilation of national laws and regulations is to provide resource material and thereby contribute to enhancing international cooperation in the struggle against terrorism. It reproduces texts of national legislation submitted by states relating to the prevention and suppression of terrorism in all its forms and manifestations. Some submissions consist of specific legislation implementing international conventions on terrorism. Others are provisions of national law relevant to the topic or a substantive summary thereof. Can you say Patriot Act?
Yeah. It's all encompassing.
It just goes universal. And what's the portal? What's the doorway, as you've so often put out? What's the portal, folks? The portal is that the Uniform Law Commission goes through the State Department to The Hague, and this stuff comes back through the State Department down to the Uniform Law Commission and back out to the states. It's a portal. It's a port of entry for this kind of cancerous legislation and legal positivism.
And there's the crux of the situation, listeners. You have the Office of International Information Programs. It's the principal international communication service for the U.S. foreign affairs community. And there is the melding of the State Department with the U.N. system. And then you have the negotiating group on the movement of natural persons, which, you know, both William and Vicki do tremendous research. They spend most of their time researching and connecting dots. And Vicki, welcome to the broadcast.
It's really an honor to be on with William Roberts. I mean, I'm a real fan.
Thank you, Vicki.
Yeah. I have to get something off my chest first. I was listening to the Senate, and Sachs, they're debating more visas for immigrants. And Saxby Chambliss was on there saying that we need a lot more foreigners to come in to work in this country. And all of the, just about every point that he had to justify it was incorrect.
Corporate media dominates the.
We'll be back to continue. Stay with us.
Independent voices.
Back with the broadcast, William Roberts with Vicki Davis. And as we went to commercial pause, Vicki, let's continue with where you were going and give a little review of where you were going.
Okay, well, the foreign workers that Chambliss wants to import, they basically, I guess they're fulfilling the terms of the GATS trade agreement, which calls for trade in services with services meaning people and jobs. They've translated people into being commodities. And if you look at the GATS agreement, and that was passed in 1995.
General Agreement on Trade and Services, correct?
That's correct.
Uh-huh.
And it calls for, there are four modes of supplying services. One is cross-border supply. Okay, now that's the illegal aliens that are just crossing over here at will, and the government not doing a thing about it. That's cross-border supply. consumption abroad, that is like medical tourism. I know they're setting up India to be a medical tourist mecca where you can go over there and get your gallbladder taken out. There is commercial presence, which means that a foreign firm or subsidiary moves over here to do business. Now, theoretically, when that happens, they should be employing the people in the country, you know, where they move. Like, for example, a lot of Indian software companies are moving over here, and they should be employing American citizens, but they don't. Indian firms do not employ American citizens. They have a sales force that's American, but the people that have the good jobs are Indians that they're importing on L1 visas. Okay, and then the last mode of trade in people, which is basically modern-day slave trade, is the presence of natural persons, and which means that the central planners of the UN that have laid all this whole system out want people to be able to just move anywhere, anytime, for any job. So it basically wipes out the concept of nationhood and citizenship. And that's why they're trying to pass this jobs bank, which I've talked to you about before, so that they can tell, you know, whether if there are any qualified Americans that are available for a job, as opposed to a foreigner who wants that job. It's basically a free-for-all in our labor market. And probably will be controlled by the State Department, as William said.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that what you said, William?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my bush from the research that I've done.
Yeah. Well, you know, what they call free trade agreements, that's Orwellian free trade. It's not free trade. It's managed trade. And they are picking the losers and the winners. And the objective is to equalize the distribution of wealth, I suppose, throughout the world, you know, as they are planning it. And in one of these documents, the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, I have a document that where they actually talk about the winners and losers.
Very important. Very important.
Yeah.
Tell us more about winners and losers.
Well, with every trade agreement, they pick who's going to win. Okay. For example, in one trade agreement, they might say that the corn growers are going to win this time, and the soybean losers the soybean people are going to lose. So our markets get flooded with soybeans. Our producers go out of business, and the multinationals take over. The next round of trade, they say, well, the corn producers are going to lose this time, and we're going to let the beef producers win. And so each time with these agreements, the winners are you know, celebrating, thinking they've really got something. They're making a lot of money, and the producer that is the loser, they're saying, you know, by that time they realize that what's happening with the entire sector is it's going to wipe out our entire economy, ultimately, as they keep passing these trade agreements where they manage and they pick the winners and the losers.
William, and any thoughts about this, William?
Well, I'm taking notes fast and furiously, Becky, and you're bringing out some really good points. There's this concept, basically, of it's in my mind, economic terrorism. It's a different form of economics and eco-terrorism via the economic environment. And this managed trade versus the free trade further points up how far into the system of Comte's captains of industry running the planet through appointed dictatorships or Soviet councils has progressed since he first started writing his philosophies in the early 1800s. We're 200 years into this system. And what I'm seeing here is that those who are paying the piper, of course, get the sense to call the tune, but these true Straussian political philosophers are applying August Comte's system of positive politics. They're writing the lyrics here. And we have an opportunity by exposing this, of tearing down this Wizard of Oz's curtain and exposing it for the charade it is. What we talk about when you have cross borders and the abroad, CLNS is what I've written down, abroad medical tourism.
Mm-hmm.
These concepts, I don't have them all. I just have them abbreviated. I have to go back and listen and think it through. But what we're talking about is establishing a change in language, a change in terminology, and by moving people around, it's not just tearing apart political understanding, because it goes into the understanding of the traditions and the customs that the East Indians, for instance, have built their thousands of years of life on. They come over here, they're interacting with a Western civilization that's really progressive under the John Dewey system, very progressive, that doesn't share that cultural orientation. So they lose, the East Indians lose their sense of unity and their cultural and moral and philosophical backgrounds are blended in with ours. We lose ours because of it. Then we bring in people who are very much the bottom of the tier to further erode the opportunity for American citizens to take a reasonable job. And in the process, we're not just blurring the boundaries, but we're shifting our attention away from the very foundations upon which each of these various nations were created and the law, the legal systems in each of the nations were established, so that we can move into this new one-world political, economic, social, and legal order, this new coming order that we're really right in the threshold of. But do continue. I was fascinated by what you were saying.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. A while back, I wrote a commentary titled "The World of One," and what they're going to be doing is just destroying everybody's culture, everybody's country, using standards and best practices. And all of these standards and best practices are coming out of the central planning bureaus of the UN. And they want to make everybody alike, because everybody must be alike to be managed by computer information systems.
That's right. You've got to have a compatible database for the whole system falls apart.
Yeah, and that's the particularly important thing about America's Job Bank, and why everybody will have to have a certification that means the same thing, so that you can import doctors from Somalia and India, and theoretically they have the same qualifications as a doctor who trained at Stanford, which, you know, is absurd. It's totally absurd.
Yeah.
Where does it fit into the dumbing down process in our schools today?
Well, the dumbing down process has to take place because, you know, let's face it, the Western cultures were really far ahead of everybody else in terms of moving towards the automated society, the information society. And so what they've been doing is dumbing down our kids to create a level playing field so that the third world will have a chance to compete, you know, on somewhat of a level playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep selling education reform as being necessary for us to compete with all of these third world people. Well, if you really stop and think about it, they don't have the education systems in their country. Like India, only the wealthy get educations, and it's all private. They don't educate everybody. So,
Well, they have a caste system, and their society has strided heavily towards the support and the continuance and the maintenance of that caste system.
Yeah,
but this UN idea of equality is right in this system, equality and equity.
We'll continue on the other side with Vicki and William, and fabulous information. Stay with us. Broadcast listeners, we have on our website, we certainly have Dennis and his staff doing tremendous work. William and his tremendous work, Vicki and her tremendous work, all working together here to educate the public about the deceptions that are being engineered that we're never hearing about in the press. And keep in mind how refugees are created, how displaced persons are created, wars, weather modification, and environmental modification, including the creation of earthquakes, people, and understanding that and kicking off the con from channelingreality.com. Listen to this quote. Recognizing their relations in the field of trade and economic endeavor should be conducted with a view to raising standards of living, ensuring full employment, and a large and steadily growing volume of real income and effective demand, and expanding the production of and trade in goods and services while allowing for the optimal use of the world's resources in accordance with the objective of sustainable development, seeking both to protect and preserve the environment and to enhance the means for doing so in a manner consistent with their respective needs and concerns at different levels of economic development, end quote. So, out of wars, weather modification, environmental modification, you create poverty. And then you have the opportunity to create slave labor in the UN system. Is that not correct, Vicki?
Well, yeah. And also another thing is that poor people can't fight back. And so the American people are being basically wiped out economically, because our country, our people are really the only ones in the world that can stop this. If we can wake up enough people fast enough.
Yes.
And we have to do it. I mean, otherwise the regular working people throughout the entire world will become slaves, and we will return to a system of feudalism, basically.
Now, once again, we lost 1 million people out of the Louisiana, New Orleans area. 1 million people were displaced. Where did they go? And
yeah,
that was as a result of a weather war put on America, because they can be steered out of harm's way. So we have Katrina, Rita, Wilma. And many people are displaced. Many people have lost everything they have. And this is exactly what you're describing, correct, Vicki?
Well, that's part of it. I mean, but that one is a hard one to for people to wrap their minds around. The science, the technology exists where they can actually create abnormal weather events to wipe out tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
But they can. And
right.
that is one part of it. Because if you look at the World Bank and the way that they have their development incentives set up, they say, eliminate poverty and we will give you money for economic development. Well, that makes no sense at all. That's backwards.
Mm.
And so the only way that you can get money for economic development is to get rid of your poor populations. And I don't know if you remember or not, but there was some country in Africa that they had slums outside of their city, you know, where people basically were camping out. And whoever was running that city, and I wish I could tell you which country and which city it was, but the city officials ran those people out of that tenement area, and they burned it down. And what they were doing, they're running them across the borders, you know, so that they can report to the UN, to the World Bank, that they have a reduced number of poor people, and then they can get more money for development. And I suspect that's happening all over Africa.
And that makes sense to you, William?
Well, you know, it's not just limited there. Here's another publication in this autumn 2005 catalog, and it's titled Exchanging Weapons for Development in Cambodia, an assessment of different weapon collection strategies by local peoples. This study comprises a participatory review of weapons collection programs in exchange for development aid from the perspective of the local people, and it describes the results that they received in the Cambodia case. And then if we go back and look at this women's issue, you know, the best way of tearing down a society is to go in, and the Bible talks about it, a house divided against itself cannot stand. The best way is to create a division or a schism between the paternal or authoritarian relationship of a man and his wife, and the idea of, and here's another publication directly from this same catalog, taking action, achieving gender equality, and empowering women. This is an African community. There are many practical steps that can be taken to reduce inequalities based on gender, which hinder the potential to reduce poverty and achieve high levels of well-being in societies around the world. But if we go back and study history, as I encourage people to do, the destruction of an agrarian society where people have the private means of production on their own farms, where they raise grains and they raise cattle and they have blacksmith shops and they have foundries, etc., where the man has and a woman together have the opportunity, the longer they're together, the more fertile they are, the more hands they have to do the work, the more prosperous they become. And so by destroying the family, as the communists so specifically state in their communist manifesto,
we'll be back.
It's just
stay
another
with us.
Way of destroying.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcast.
Welcome back to the broadcast, listeners. Vicki is with us. William is with us. Let's bring up TJ in Minnesota, see what he has to say. Welcome to the broadcast, TJ.
Hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah. I just wanted to be sure that all three of you know that I've been listening to commercial shortwave in the recent history for 5 to 6 years. I've only heard one or two possibly more dynamic, inspirational, accurate, benevolent, intelligent programs in that period of time, and that's regarding this show today, and it is vitally important that it is made available to the masses in every format possible, from audio cassette to CD, whatever they got. Everybody cannot afford these books from the UN, and half the people out there could not assimilate the information or understand it. And, Vicki, I hope that within the next decade you can write a book called The Army of One, spelt W-O-N, because I want to be a part of it.
Well, I don't know that I will ever write a book. Well, I basically have written a book, but it's in the form of commentaries and information on my website. If you go to my website and poke around, you'll find a lot of information.
Yes. I just wanted to make sure that you three realize the value of this radio show as you are presenting it today. I focus on weather modification. My head is wrapped around weather modification, and it's been there for about 6 years. And I have done my research, and I've been a victim of it. And the people that are not yet a victim of weather modification must realize, such as, and I'm referring to the cash crop agricultural people of the middle United States, they are owned basically, they can't do their work without corporations like Monsanto, Cargill, the fertilizer, the seed conglomerate, globalist corporations, and they are being used by those corporations to maximize the profits for them via corn and soybeans. So they have not received such tremendous negative influence on their agricultural capabilities. Now, you can change the grain market by altering the weather by as little as 2 degrees Fahrenheit at a given time, especially during planting season. At the end result of that is dynamic economic results. And these people do not know this. But eventually, when Monsanto's done with them and the other globalist corporations, they're going to be in a sustainable community as well, and they'll have to beg to be able to even work their land. That's my opinion, but I think it's fairly accurate.
Yeah, I've been watching the weather and weather modification for about 3 years also, and I know that the weather here in Idaho, where I live, has changed dramatically. We used to have real winters. Now we have winters, you know, like maybe you would have found in mid-Nevada or perhaps, you know, closer to Seattle, but nowhere near like it used to be.
Yep. And I don't want you people to change today's program from all you've already contributed. I just want to make sure that the general public of the United States and the world needs a rerun of this show, or they need to have a hard copy of it if they care about their lives, their liberties, and their fortunes. And I don't want to say any more. You were doing great without me. God bless all three of you.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, as we went to commercial pause, you were giving a dissertation about the big picture in place there, William, and I'm sure you've lost your place. But
not at all, Chris. I can pick it up right now.
Go right ahead.
TJ's point was excellent. When we're talking about weather modification, if you go down and look at what has all been transpiring in the South and the South of us, it has translated all summer into the most deep drought that I've experienced in the 10 years that I've been back in southwestern Missouri. I collect a lot of rain water to use for my own personal use, and this year, for the first time, I had to go out and actually get, but fortunately, only 5 gallons because we just got a rain, the first one in months. And how does that translate? With all the various weather modification, it alters the course of the natural flow of water up into the central states, into the grasslands where we produce the hay, the beef, and the grain. And so by playing their modification games down in the south in the Gulf, we've been deprived of all of the water that we would ordinarily have gotten. My hay crop this year is minimal. The people around me that raise beef are already and have been for most of the summer feeding. That's going to translate into higher beef costs. Gasoline, the fuel, the diesel, all of that is necessary to harvest the grains and to bring up the hay and to transport the cattle to stock yards and then off again to the slaughter yards. The cost of diesel has doubled, a little bit more than doubled just this year. That's going to be higher beef prices. That's going to make Southern American beef very desirable to the packing plants. And so all of it translates together. It keeps continually going back. You're right on track with what your direction is, Chris. This is some of the most important information. TJ's smart enough to pick up on it. Vicky's done a wonderful job. Dennis is doing a great job on the website from what I've heard. I haven't seen it because I'm not on the web. But all of these things work together. These are powerful tools that we can use. And if we understand the destruction of the family, the destruction of the means of production, which basically is the farm, was the plan of the capitalists with the Industrial Revolution in England, Scotland, those people were taken off their farms, taken in England and in Europe, taken off of their farms, brought into communities. The women were put to work. That's what we mean when we say equality between men and women. Any man and any woman could go in the bathroom, pull the pants down, they'll see there's nothing equal about men and women. We are different. We're not equal. God doesn't make things equal. There's no two blades of grass that are equal. No two flowers are equal. No snowflakes are equal. We are all different. We're uniquely different. We were created that way. And what is happening is an obfuscation of equality for the purposes of destroying the system so that we go under a nanny state where the socialist mommy state emerges, and instead of being self-sufficient, self-productive, self-directed, self-governed people, we become slaves of the state. And that we must resist. As Vicky said, if we do not, it'll be a global return to a dark age such as human life has never seen.
Yeah, I read an article by a man, I think his name was William Lind, and he was talking about cultural Marxism, and that's exactly what it is, you know, the destruction of the family, the drugs that are being brought into the country, the destruction of entire neighborhoods, breaking up families, and making parents irrelevant to a child, you know, by the state taking over all of the areas of responsibility for a child, making the parent irrelevant, basically. And all of that is cultural Marxism. And it's to break up the family unit, because the strongest social unit and bonds are the family. And if you can break that up, then you can basically control the society.
And once again, we're going back to human rights treaties of the UN system and the UN rights of the child.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Now let me read something to you. I watched a program on C-SPAN. It was Tom Donahue of the Chamber of Commerce, and he was giving a seminar on outsourcing. And this is what he said, and this is an exact quote, because I listened to the C-SPAN tape 5 times because I couldn't believe he said it. He said, and this was about outsourcing, he says, "We can breed them here and develop them ourselves, or we can get them from somewhere else." Now that tells you that these people, now the Chamber of Commerce is an NGO, the International Chamber of Commerce is an NGO, and Tom Donahue, and I don't know whether the local members realize what kind of network they're involved in, but they don't have the best interests of the people in this country in mind. But Tom Donahue actually had the nerve to say that on a program about people. You know, we can breed them here and develop them, or we can get them someplace else, just like cattle, just like working oxen. And I was so stunned when he said that.
William?
Well, I am too, Vicky. You know, I've read so much philosophy and the Straussians and the Comptons and so on. Generally speaking, there's a different worldview or a shift or a mentality in the people who have been in positions of power and influence, accumulating and amassing wealth for hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of years. Now, there have been shifts. There were shifts during the Reformation. There have been major shifts. The shift of all of the gold that came out of South America altered some of these positions of power, but most of it has re-centralized again. We see it when we see the people come together in G7, G8, the Maurice Strong Conclave up in Colorado and those kinds of places. But they truly believe that those of the highest wealth and those of the longest genealogies, they truly believe that they are the masters of the planet, and that we, the people, so to speak, are too stupid, too dumb, and it would destroy us if we knew the truth. And so we just simply have got to continue on this direction and empower ourselves by reading their documents, understanding their philosophy, and as we understand their philosophy, then as they go from global to local, we can meet them on the battlegrounds in our counties and in our states, and we can stop this system. And I'm confident that we can, because their system is weak, it's frail, it's ingrown, miscegenated, and it's completely devoid of any kind of a true spiritual connection to our customs and our traditions, the family, the home, in the school. This is like a cancer growing from within. Every year we graduate out another group of seniors, and they then go on to college. And with every year, the next big change. And so Every time the collegiates graduate, we've got another system of social engineers who have been trained to implement the very next stage. And they've had 16, 17, 18 years of preparation. And when they come out, they think they're doing the right thing. They really, truly believe that this is a good thing and this is the direction that humanity needs to go. But we can break the cycle. We can go into the universities. We can give them this information. As TJ said, give them tapes. Turn them on to the books. Let them go and read the UN publications for themselves. Let them read the PNAC documents so that they realize that they're being mocked, that they're being laughed at. We, the people, are being scoffed. We're being denied an opportunity of self-government that we, the people, built in this country. And it is going to be the United States of America that will be the pivotal stone as to whether or not this globalist agenda can be stopped and stopped and stopped and exposed and put to rest forever. If not, it will disappear into the mist of time on the other side of the pasture like that trophy buck, and we won't see him again for 500 years.
Now, this is vital.
Well, and a critical part of this is your is William's teachings on logical positivism and how they are using language. It's all about the language that they use, and it's all intended to defraud, like sustainable development. Who knows what that word... You can't define that word. It's only definable in the context at the moment. And so, and that's the kind of way that they are implementing all of this stuff that's going on in all the arenas. And they are even bringing these international schools into our local communities under the name of international baccalaureate schools. And they build them up as if they're schools for the cream of the crop. But what they actually are indoctrination centers to train global citizens, world citizens. And they focus on cultural diversity, on all these subject areas that are culturally cannibalizing to any culture, because they want an international one world culture standard.
This is another way, Vicki, that they work this logical positivist system. This again, I'm just reading out of this catalog, the autumn 2005 unp.un.org. Who's got the power? Here's another book. Who's got the power? ? Transforming health systems for women and children. The central thrust of this Millennium Project Task Force report is that dramatic and meaningful sustainable progress towards decreasing child and maternal mortality requires as an intense focus on improving health systems. Now, who's kidding who? Who's kidding who? We have quotes from Ted Turner that they want to destroy off the face of the earth a majority of the population. Who's kidding who? Who cares about maternal health? What they're really talking about, it's in the title, they don't hide it, who's got the power? It's transforming health systems for women and children. We transform the health systems, we throw all these benefits out to the women and the children, allow the women and the children to gain the ascendancy, we marginalize the man. Who remembers, now I don't have a television, never owned a television, wouldn't take a television if he gave it to me for free, but I was at a friend's house one day and saw this movie, it was called Kim the Tool Man, or something like that. And this guy, who had this great workshop and all these interesting things going on, was an absolute boof. He was a complete and total disaster as a man, and he always turned to his wife for guidance. And then he'd go and lean up against the fence, and his neighbor would give him psychological counseling. That's the mental health screening process right there. So through the use of this clever manipulation of Hollywood, they are changing the men in this country from men who were capable of settling an enormous continent to men who are no longer confident that they could even so much as build a birdhouse and successfully provide housing for birds to fly through the yard. This has got to stop. We know better than that. We're not that incompetent.
They're even going after the little boys in school. I listened to Dr. Karen Ephraim of Eagle Forum in California, I believe it is. I'm not sure. But anyway, all of this drugging of little boys, basically they want the little boys to act like little girls. And their criteria for assessing little boys in preschool is if the boys are able to feel the feelings of the other children, to feel compassion for the other children. I don't know if you have any kids, but little boys aren't like that. You know, they like to run and play, and they're rough, and they don't sit down and be quiet and do quiet activities like little girls do. Is that they're just totally different. But when boys act like boys, then these social engineers in the preschool say that they're hyperactive and they need to be put on drugs.
We'll be back to wrap it up with William and Vicki, and let's see if we can do this again on Friday, the three of us. Check your schedules, and let's see if we can do this on Friday. We'll be back. Stay with us. Welcome back to the conclusion of the broadcast. To enter into the fray as well, in today's paper, November 2nd, The Oklahoman, expert calls water value underappreciated. He says, and this is Robert Glennon, Americans are drinking and eating their environment dry. And this is the professor, and he's an expert on groundwater. And he stated this yesterday at Oklahoma's Governor's Water Conference. Quote, water has a value we haven't appreciated. And this is by Robert Glennon, a professor at the University of Arizona College of Law. It's not rocket science, he says. Well, we'll cover this some more, but basically he says groundwater laws are underdeveloped and were molded around gold mining years ago. Quote, if you think about it, miners were thieves, he said. The law has not kept pace, he says. He recommended several changes to decrease pumping, including restricting access, requiring conservation, and increasing water rates. Well, what are we dealing with here? Putting meters on water wells to control the food and water. And this is all part of the whole big picture, isn't it, William and Vicki?
Worse than that.
Well, it sure is, Chris. And, you know, one of the things that he didn't mention, and it's one of the greatest travesties that ever came down the pike, I spent many years in the early parts of my life working in civil engineering firms, and this idea of using a crapper toilet is just about as absurd as we can possibly get. The first thing you do is you use 5 gallons of water, then you contaminate it. Then you put it into a pipeline. In order to make it flow all the way to the treatment plants, you've got to have everybody connected to it, which creates revenues for the state and for the county. Then when it gets there, what is the first thing they do? They have to try and separate the solids out. That's the number one job. Then they go through this entire process of trying to clarify the water. That's a huge expense. It's ridiculous. And then what do? Then they discharge the as clean as possible effluent out as they can. What happens? The water's still there. It hasn't gone anywhere. It's just, in my opinion, an improper technology that is being used over and over again, and it has outlived its usefulness. A crapper toilet, a flush toilet, is perfectly logical if you happen to live in a 34 or 40-story building and you don't want to carry your honey bucket out. But to waste our water on that, it's like, you know, going back to the horse and buggy again. We can put men up in orbit, low orbits around the space. We've got all these little satellites and whatnot out there. We've got the cell telephones. When are we going to put our minds to this idea of getting our solids, our excrement, into a system that is more intelligent than that?
We'll cover this on Friday, and let's give Vicki the parting shot of the show. Go ahead, Vicki.
The UN wants to control water. That's on their agenda, because if you control food and you control water, then you control people. And my final thing is that I don't want to go to Soylent Green. So, but I really enjoyed this. It's really an honor to be on the show with you, William.
Can we do
it? It's mutual. We've all got the same direction, and this is a real pleasure.
Can we do this again on Friday now?
Yes.
The three of us? William?
No problem.
Okay.
I can. Yep.
Okay. So for 2 hours on Friday, the three of us will come together again and discuss these issues. They're all connecting, interconnected to the UN system, the State Department, global governance, public-private partnerships. The whole mess is all together. And Prince Charles and Gorbachev are here for a purpose, listeners. We have to find out what that is. And good afternoon. God bless you all.